absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to 10 a.m. on a bright, clear, enjoyable first Sunday of summer. This is the Master Plan, and you know who this is. I am JT, a.k.a. the Master. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. We're going to be talking today about some boxing. We're going to wrap up the NBA season. And I'm also going to be talking about some football. Just a little bit of football. But before that, let's just listen to a little Jaheim. And just in case, I'll be right back. In case you didn't know, there was a championship title fight last night between the other mouth in the other weight class. I'm talking about Adrian Bonner against Paulie Malignaggi. And it was took place up in Brooklyn, New York at the Barclays Center, which is Malignaggi. And I know probably butchering his name, but I'm trying to get it as right as possible. Hometown. Quite naturally, if you know anything about boxing, you know anything about Adrian Bonner, he's a bigger talker. And last night, I didn't watch the fight, but according to I don't say all media, but a lot of media, he was the bigger puncher on Saturday night. Supposedly he scored enough hard blows to beat, Malignaggi in a 12-round split decision, and he took Paulie's welterweight title. Now, this is the first time that Adrian Bronner was fighting at 147 pounds, and after moving up from lightweight. But he had enough power to overcome a real tough fight by Magliani, and now he remains unbeaten in 27 fights. Now, like I said, he moved up to welterweight from lightweight. Now, this is his third title in as many weight classes, so he's definitely solidifying his reputation as one of the rising stars in boxing. And for those who didn't know, Floyd Mayweather was watching from ringside. Now, check this out. I think, let's finish the Broner fight, and then I give you an idea of where I'm going here. Like he talked pre-fight, like Paulie talked pre-fight, these guys don't like each other, talked a lot of smack going back and forth. Before the fight, leading up to the fight, and Adrian Bronner, like him or hate him, he still talks a lot. He even talks more to Floyd Mayweather. This kid's young and real cocky, and he talked throughout the fight to Paulie, and Paulie wasn't going to back off of him, but Bronner. Couldn't knock him down. He had said he was gonna knock him out. That didn't happen. But he kept winning round after round, and he, like I said, he took a 12-round split decision. But he had plenty of talk before the fight, like I said, and he had plenty to talk about after the fight. Now the judging, was one judge had it for Magliani winning 15-13, while the other two judges favored Browner. One had him 15-13, and the second judge had him 17-11. And the Associated Press had Browner winning the fight 17-11. One of the quotes Browner said that he's a world-class fighter, and he said to come to somebody's hometown and beat them on a split decision, that's saying something. And like I said, both these guys, I honestly believe this is not pre-hype or post-hype. These guys really don't like each other at all. And Paulie did plenty of trash talking before the fight and even taunted Browner several times during the fight. He landed some punches. None of them seemed to have much effect on Browner, but who kept on pressing? He kept on attacking throughout the bout. Browner said he couldn't hit me. He couldn't hit me, and he was shadow boxing. If you had seen Paulie after the fight, he looked a lot different than Browner did. Puffy eyes, puffy. He looked like he got beat up. Let me put it that way. Browner supposedly, and I'm going through this, let Magliani win a couple of the first early rounds, just to, I guess basically to feel him out. And but he was just steadily trying to walk him down, and he was giving him body shots, and that was hurting him. So you'd have to think that after a while that would definitely wear you down. Ringside punch stats had Browner landing 246 out of 524 punches, while Paulie landed 214 out of 843. So Magliani was throwing a lot of punches, but a lot of them weren't landing. So he was the busier fighter, but Browner landed punches that were to be able to score more with those punches. Browner's 27-0. Like I said, he's undefeated. Paulie is 32-5. And I got an extended version. Not an extended version. I got about a 7-minute version of post in the ring interview with Adrian Browner and Paulie Magliani. Now, like I said, it's like over 7 minutes, and it's going to give you an idea how much these guys dislike each other and how much these guys talk a lot. And you got to listen to the whole thing because it gets very interesting at the end of this interview with Magliani, the accusations he makes. So you got to listen to the whole thing. I know it's long, it's 7 minutes, over 7 minutes, but I want you to listen to the whole thing to get an idea of the atmosphere and what took place on Saturday night. So listen to this, and I'll be right back.
The chairperson is Melvina Lathan. Introducing you are and the new WBA welterweight champion of the world, Adrian the Problem Browner.
At the age of 23, Adrian Browner joins legends Roberto Duran and Roy Jones Jr., as well as Robert Guerrero, as the only fighters to win a world title in their first fight after jumping over a weight class, winning via split decision over Paulie Malignaggi. The new WBA welterweight champion is the problem. Let's go to Jim Gray.
Adrian, congratulations. How would you assess this fight? Certainly, this was your toughest competition as a professional.
First of all, being my Showtime debut, I got to do this for my fans. Because this is what they want to see. Hey, Pop, brush my hair. Okay.
The tradition, I guess, continues. Now, about the fight.
What was your assessment? Pauly fought exactly how I thought he was going to fight. As soon as he felt my power, he got on his bicycle, and I had to literally cut him off the whole fight. I respect him. He's a hell of a fighter. He's a world-class fighter. And to come in somebody's hometown and beat them with a split decision, that's great to me.
Adrian, the volume of punches certainly favored Pauly. However, you kept saying the entire fight, we could read your lips and hear you, you can't hit me. Were you at ever any point hit with a shot that concerned you?
Negative, man. He couldn't hit me. He couldn't hit me. He was shadow boxing.
When you knew that you were losing rounds, particularly early, it seemed as though you were able to take control, came alive in the fifth round, and then the sixth round, you seemed to be much more. Were you feeling out in those first few rounds, or what was your strategy?
Listen to me. You seen I came out with French Montana. I ain't worrying about nothing. So, with that being said, I got to give a supreme shout-out to Al Haymon, Aviance Jules, you know, breadwinner for this nice 18-karat grill in my mouth, you know.
And let me ask you about winning your third title. You're 23 years of age, three different weight divisions. What does that mean to you at this point in your career?
I mean, it's a tremendous accomplishment. 27-0, 22 knockouts. I mean, who's doing it like me in the game? Nobody. And shout out to World Star, because we're going to put his ass on World Star, too.
And your role model, Floyd Mayweather, he was here this evening. Where is it that you can improve? And he was saying that perhaps maybe your footwork and a little flat-footed, that there's places for you to improve. What do you see?
I didn't have to use my footwork today. He ran. So all I did was cut off the ring. That's all I had to do.
You comfortable at this weight?
Very comfortable. You've seen that in there.
What's next? What do you want to do?
I'm going to be honest. Hold on, fans. I got to tell y'all that this is important. I'm going to be honest. Since everybody thinks I'm picking my opponent, my next opponent, I'm going to let y'all pick. And whoever got the highest percentage, I'm fighting.
Final thought. Any regrets about anything that went on in the pre-fights and all the news conferences?
Negative. I'm good. I beat Pauly. I left with his belt and his girl.
Adrian, congratulations on winning the title. Pauly, come on in.
Hey, I'm just saying, you lost.
I know I lost.
Hold on. Wait,
don't brag about taking my side piece. Don't brag about taking my side piece, though. That's my side piece. You don't get laid.
All right. Hopefully we'll have a chance here in a moment to talk to Pauly. As cooler heads prevail, let me walk over to Pauly and see if he's ready. Pauly, are you ready to talk about the fight? Pauly, are you ready to talk about the fight?
Let me give Jimmy this.
Assess the fight from your perspective and the split decision.
I thought I worked him. He did the same thing he did in the Dale Evans fight. You know, he was sharp in his spots, but he just wasn't busy. You know, in his spots, he was sharp. He didn't land a lot of the shots he was throwing. They looked pretty, but he worked about 30 seconds of every round. You know, it was a close fight because when he did work, it was good. I'm not going to take it away from him, but I thought I outworked him by a lot. I thought I threw a lot more punches. I thought I carried the pace. I thought I threw a lot more body shots. Tom Streck is a New York judge that was in Al Haymon's pocket. It's very simple. I mean, 117-111 was a joke, man.
Great. That
was a joke. This was a close fight. I don't even mind if you had him winning close or me winning close. It was really that kind of fight, you know. I'm not an immature kid like him. I'm not going to go up here and talk a bunch of BS and lie and whatnot. The fight really could have went either way. And even the fans, I thought I won the fight. You know, I'll be honest with them, too. It could have went either way. But, you know, in my hometown, as a defending champion, I felt like I should have got it. I'm the defending champion. You have to take the belt from the champion. And I don't think he did enough to take the belt from the champion tonight. But
Did you execute your strategy as you wanted to tonight?
In spots. You know, everybody has a game plan until they get hit. You know, in spots I did. I felt like in spots I messed up his game plan as well. I felt like we both had to adjust at times, and we did, you know. I thought it was an entertaining fight. I thought we had a lot of momentum changes, and I think the fans got their money's worth tonight. But boxing's always full of shit, man. It's always politics in this thing, man. The fans can never go home happy, you know what I mean? You get a great show, and then always get spoiled with some BS like this.
Well, aren't you, at this point right now, biting the hand that feeds you? Isn't this part of the game?
It's part of the game, but is it right, Jim? It's part of the game, but is it right? But does it mean it shouldn't get fixed? It is part of the game. But does it mean everybody should just sit back and not fix it? It's not. It doesn't mean that's right. You know what I mean? It's definitely part of the game. But somebody should stand up and do something about it. I feel like I'm the only one that ever talks and opens his mouth. Listen, man, I got a good job, man. I work with you guys at Showtime, you know. I've made some really good money in boxing. I've made some really good money tonight. I don't have to fight again. If I never fight, I'm still okay. I enjoy competing. I enjoy fighting. But when it's like this, man, you know, it's BS, man. You know, why would I want...
If I don't ask you this question, people are going to be upset. Are you saying this fight was fixed? Is this a path you really want to go down?
I'm not saying it was fixed, but it's always the politically more connected fighter gets the close decisions, and this was no different. That's what I'm saying. It always happens. It always happens.
Okay, Paulie, we appreciate it. We'll see you next time behind the mic.
Bottom line, Ronald landed punches. They moved Magliagni. When Magliagni landed the punches, Browner didn't budge. He went the distance against a fighter, meaning Browner, that usually is knocking out people. Okay? Browner earned about $1.5 million in this fight. Magliagni, his purse was about $1.125 million. So these guys, both of them was a career high in a gate, but it is what it is. I mean, you heard it. He pretty much said that if it's a close fight, the one that is the darling of the boxing world and the boxing associations is going to get the decision, regardless if it should go to the more lessly hyped opponent. It is that's what he's saying. I'm not saying that. That's what Paulie's saying. You just got to leave it up to you when you get a chance on Showtime to watch the fight. Unfortunately, I didn't. Just getting an assessment of what happened. It is what it is. I mean, what can I tell you? I'm going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back and talk about some basketball.
You all know and love her from the WNBA, but now you can hear her every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. It's Time Out with Sylvia Crawley.
This is Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. I'm your host. I have a very interesting show lined up for you tonight. We have Mr. Otis Winston. Otis, thank you so much for being on the show.
You know it's my pleasure, Sil.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. Information, motivation, variety.
All right. That's Sylvia Crawley, and that's, for you all that don't know, that's on Monday, Eastern Standard Time, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I should say. She's got an absolutely great show with tremendous guests. Tune in. You will not be disappointed, I guarantee you. Sylvia Crawley Milbury is a class woman. In every way, and she puts on a class show. Listen to her and enjoy what she has to say and her guests also. With that being said, the Miami Heat, like everyone knows, including Miami Heat haters or whatever you want to say, fans that don't like the Miami Heat versus fans that are of either LeBron or the Miami Heat or both. Back-to-back champions, three times consecutively in the NBA Finals. Two of the three, which is the last three, like I said, back-to-back, they've won. For all you haters, and I'm going to say haters out there because it's all about hate now, because the fact is all the things that you said about LeBron James and the Miami Heat, and they beat the Oklahoma City Thunder with Kevin Durant and company, with all three of them, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant last year. They came up against old school, another big three, Tim Duncan, and these guys are four-time champions. The organization is four-time champions. And Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker and company, including Kawhi Leonard, and a big contribution from also from Danny Green during the series, still wasn't able to defeat the Miami Heat. It took them to seven games. Both these teams are good teams. They were evenly matched. But the Miami Heat showed their superiority in the last two games. Now, all throughout, I shouldn't say all throughout, but the Indiana Heat series, it was back and forth, back and forth. No two teams won two consecutive games. And Miami Heat prevailed in that. In this series, it was back and forth. No two teams up until the last two games won back-to-back over the other team. So this was a very good series, and it tested the mental and the mental fortitude of the Miami Heat, including LeBron James. And what happened in the last two games? And I'm giving you the last two games because I want to just illustrate what I'm talking about here. Okay, because a lot of people say that LeBron James is not the best basketball player on the planet. And I have to seriously dispute that for the simple fact is this is game six. And this is the first game back from being down 3-2 going home to Miami. So they needed to win these two games. They needed to win this game to force a game seven. So game six, okay, we're talking about Tim Duncan, who scored 30 points, Kawhi Leonard, who scored 22 points, Tony Parker, who scored 19 points. So they had contributions, and Manu Ginobili didn't only scored 9 points. So they had good production from their big players on their team. This is game six in Miami. LeBron James, 32 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists, a triple-double. Mario Chambers showed up, 20 points. Dwayne Wade showed up and contributed 14 points. And Miami wins that game by 103-100 to push it to a game seven. Now, like I said, no team in this series has won back-to-back games. It's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the reason I started game six is because that was the chance for the San Antonio Spurs to win the series. Okay? What happened is this. Tim Duncan scored 30 points. All 30 of his points were in the first quarter. In the first half. He didn't score in the second half. Had a shot to take this series. And inexplicably, and it happened, and I keep on saying this over and over, it happened in the Indiana series. the first game in Indiana series. The coach, the head coach, took out his big man near the end of the game, and it cost the Indiana Pacers the first game. Now, just think about that, and I keep on emphasizing this. Just think about this. They win the first game. Everyone knows they won the second game. They lost the first game because, in my opinion, that defensive presence that was in the middle for most of the game wasn't in the middle when I thought it should have been at the most crucial point in the game, and that's in the waning seconds, the last five seconds or whatever it was. So LeBron James had an easy path to the basket without any resistance, say, if Roy Hibbert had been in there. Well, what happened? The Indiana Pacers wound up losing that game in seven, but if they had won that first game, who knows what would have happened, because they won a second game. So deja vu all over again. What happens? Game six, 20-something seconds left in the game. Tim Duncan out of the game and take Charlie Parker out of the game. Now, I can understand maybe Tony Parker, because he may be hampered, maybe a little exhausted and hampered by his hamstring. But Tim Duncan, your big man in the middle, what are you doing? What happened? Shot goes up. Tim Duncan's not there. Others are there, but not the talent level of a Tim Duncan to be able to get an opportunity to get the defensive rebound versus Chris Bosh getting the offensive rebound, gathering it up, and pushing it out to one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the NBA, Ray Allen. And what happens? Ray Allen drains it near the end of the buzzer, near the end of the game, like I guess it was like 1.9 seconds left after he drained it, less than 2 seconds, and it ties the game up. Now, they were up 5 points with 20-something seconds left in the game. Now they're tied. You don't think that takes something out of them? What happens? In overtime, they get outscored 8-5, okay? So it was a very tight overtime, but San Antonio could only score 5 points. Miami only scored 8 points. But those 8 points were 3 points better than San Antonio, which pushes it now to a game seven. LeBron James, 32 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds in game six. For those of you who say he doesn't show up, I think he showed up in that. I really believe he showed up in that. All right? Let's go to game seven, all right? Now, I'll premise this by saying that no team has won back-to-back games. No team has won back-to-back games. Every other game, either it's San Antonio, Miami, San Antonio, Miami, San Antonio, Miami, San Antonio, Miami. So San Antonio has won 3 games. Miami has won 3 games now. But no team has won back-to-back games. So what's going to happen in Game 7? The history says that Game 7, if it's played on a home court, quite naturally it is, the team that the home court team usually wins that game. Overwhelmingly, the home team wins that game. Everybody thought that San Antonio was so deflated there was no way they were going to come back. These guys have multiple championships. They have a lot of heart and a lot of mental fortitude. So, in my opinion, to think that they wouldn't show up or they would crumble under the pressure once it got too tight or whatever. That wasn't even in my thought process. I thought this was going to be a good game, one way or the other. And also, the history of this series says no team has won back-to-back games. So Which way do you weigh? You weigh on history of home, the seventh game played at home. No, the percentage says the home team wins majority of time. Or do you go and say, well, no team in this series has won back-to-back games at this every other game. So is San Antonio going to win this game? Or is Miami Heat going to win this game? The naysayers of the Miami Heat and LeBron James saying it's going to be San Antonio. And the naysayers say it's the refs, it's the politics of the league that they're going to make sure that the Miami Heat win. Well, I know a guy, and I can't wait to get to him, because the fact is all that what he's saying is all kinds of hate. And in denial of a team that's a good team. I'm not going to say it's a great team. It's a very good team with the best player on the planet. And it's not even close. And it's obviously, if you look at what's been going on in this series, and especially the last two games, that Mr. James, for those who say that he doesn't have any heart and he's not a closer, has grown up. Besides being a facilitator, besides being able to get his teammates involved, LeBron can get his. And all the hard work that he had put in on the past summer, working with Hakeem Olajuwon, working on his jump shot, all came to fruition on Thursday night, the seventh game in Miami. Let me just go to that game and give you some stats on that game, and you be the judge. For those who don't know the stats in this game and still think that the Miami Heat and the NBA is in cahoots. Tim Duncan, 24 points, 12 rebounds. Kawhi Leonard, 16 rebounds, 19 points. Tony Parker, 10 points. Manu Ginobili, 18 points. So the big four showed up. All right? 24 from Duncan. 19 from a 21-year-old Kawhi Leonard. 18 from a 37-year-old or 35-year-old, 36, wherever he is, Manu Ginobili. And on the other side, LeBron James, 37 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists. Chris Bosh did not score. Mario Chambers chimed in with 14 points. Dwayne Wade chimed in with a serious 23 points. And then the X Factor, Mr. did not play for the last two games or so, Shane Battier, 6 for 8 from the three-point line, 18 points. Okay? What I'm saying is this. Game 6, Game 7, Miami Heat showed up and played like the heart of a champion. But LeBron James, they were giving LeBron James the open jump shot over and over again, whether it was from the three-point line or from two-point distance. They were giving it to him. Take it. He was less than 30. He was a little bit more than 30% leading up to this game from taking jump shots. So they wanted him to be able to take the jumpers. Well, guess what? You made a mistake, because in my opinion, and when I used to play basketball, when I used to play continuous basketball, a shooter gets in a rhythm. And if you leave the shooter out there enough times, he'll get in a rhythm in his jump shot. Some of them have to take it to the hole to get into a rhythm to be able to shoot a jump shot. Well, you gave LeBron James and all the space he had, and some of these shots were like ridiculous because they looked like they were just, he was in practice taking shots. That's how wide open he was. And he was killing him in the shooting jump shots. He shot 50% from three-point range. You tell me that's not clutch? You tell me that's not heart of a champion? You told me that he doesn't have a killer instinct doing that? Come on. Stop hating from the haters of LeBron James and the Miami Heat. You got to give it to him. No matter if you like him or not, when it came time to play, the last two games, the players that needed to step up, stepped up, including LeBron James, and they won this game 95-88. Now, the game, in my opinion, I know it is what it is, but it was closer than the score dictates or is. But the point is, they did what they had to do in order to win this game. And I'm imploring the people that are still hating on LeBron James that he is fulfilling what he set out to do. He's got two rings now, back to back, against two very good opponents, not like the opponents that last year was against a big three, a young big three, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. Extremely good big three at that time. Quite naturally, James Harden moved on to Houston, and Russell Westbrook got hurt this year. But they go up against, and I'll keep repeating myself, they went up against probably the toughest opponent, he even said it, it's the toughest opponent they've ever gone against, the toughest series that they've ever had, and this is coming out of their mouth. It's the toughest series they ever had to go up against, and these guys pulled through it. They made the plays that they had to do in order to get the job done. So you can have all the hate that you want. You can have all the dislike of LeBron James and the Miami Heat, but you got to give them their due. When they needed to play, when they needed to score, when they needed each other, they pulled together and got the job done. So, Vic, stop hating. Mac, stop hating. LeBron James is the best player on the planet. Bar none. It's obvious. It was on a world stage. It's obvious. I understand that Kobe Bryant's got more rings. I understand that. LeBron's career is not over yet. I understand that Kobe has a reputation for being a closer, for being the Black Mamba that absolutely put a dagger in your heart in order to win a game. I understand what you're saying. LeBron just does it a different way. But he does it. But he has does it. He has done it. If you know, what was said before was, all right, you won one championship. All right, prove it to me. Do it again. Well, he's done it again. He's done it again. And it's not like he had to take a back seat and let somebody else carry him. He's carried the team. He's been the big man on the team. So, come on. You got to realize, you got to understand, and you got to see what's in front of you and not look through rose-colored glasses or not through little skewered glasses that you're only seeing what you want to see. It's obvious. It's absolutely obvious that he's the best player on the planet, two-time world champion, back-to-back, three times have been in a championship the last 3 years, What more can you say?
For a roundup of the week's events, interviews, and a whole lot more, tune in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern for the FSP Cruise Show, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. Here's a sample.
We have Mr. Stephen A. Smith. Hello, Stephen A. I'm glad to... Well, this is Jerry, your host, along with my co-host Black and Jeff on here. Glad to...
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
What's going on, Stephen?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. The FSP Crew Show. Information, motivation, variety.
Okay. I'm back. And that's the FSP Crew Show. Didn't tell you what time it is, but the time is 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursdays. Every Thursday, I'm the host. And like you said, my two co-hosts, Black the Bookie, and also Jeff the Joker. Tune in. We talk about a lot of things. We have exciting guests on there. I think you'll enjoy the conversations that we have and the banter back and forth with along callers that call in. And we have an enjoyable time. Two guys from Jersey, me and Jeff are from Jersey. Black is from the D.C. area. But we have a different perspective on a lot of things, and we bring it. We absolutely bring it when we get together on Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be there. Call us in. Same website, same call-in telephone number, 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 if you'd like to talk to me. We got about 18 minutes left in the show. You know what's been going on here. The other thing in basketball, that the back and forth has been that Doc Rivers supposedly wanted to go to the Clippers, and then it was off, and then it was back on again, and then it was off, and it was back on again. Well, the talks are off again. Okay, and he backed off. And it's not sure if he's going to go back to the Celtics, because I saw a article in the online that said that Doc Rivers and Rajon Rondo possibly had a fight, and that's one of the reasons why Doc Rivers is thinking about not coming back. For the simple fact is, Rajon Rondo is not one of Doc Rivers' favorite people. Seems like the feud between the Rivers and his point guard led to an incident during a team meeting in the locker room, which Rondo cursed at Rivers, who responded by trying to fight Rondo before the fracas was broken up. It didn't say, this is going by report I'm reading, it didn't say when the fight occurred. It just says that Rivers is no longer pursuing the L.A. Clippers head coaching position, and the Celtics will resolve the situation on Monday. From what I understand, from what I'm reading here, that Rivers and Rondo have clashed in the past. They got a rocky relationship, was the reason behind the Celtics putting Rondo on the trading block in each of the past two seasons. Oh, see, you never know. See, and now I understand that, because the reputation, Doc Rivers as a player and as a head coach is considered a real good guy. Player type of coach, somebody the players will want to play with, play for, I should say. So to have situation of a player cussing him out, which I gather that probably happens a lot, but to actually want to fight the coach and the coach want to fight this, either it's a personality conflict or I'd have to think that the player is extremely difficult to deal with. Very hard-headed, very stuck in his ways, not wanting to budge from what he wants and getting his way. And Doc Rivers is trying to coach the whole team, including Ray John Rondo, and Ray John Rondo wants to be the head diva, I would think. I'm gathering that if Doc Rivers had that much of a problem and the team was trying to trade him for the last two seasons, there's got to be a lot of going on that that's been behind closed doors, and the what's going on here that they're trying to trade Rajon Rondo is the reason that the because he's one of the best point guards in the league, and if you're trying to, for the last two seasons you're trying to get rid of him or trade him however you want to say it, what's going on here? I understand they're their older team. Rajon Rondo is, like I said, one of the best point guards in the league, and point guards are not to be taken lightly, because there's not too many elite point guards that in the league, and Rajon Rondo is a combination of a decent, halfway decent shooter, very good facilitator or distributor of the ball, and is a good point guard running the team. So I would think this, okay? I would think that Doc Rivers said, look, it's me or Rajon Rondo. Plain and simple. Let me out of my contract. Let me get out of here if you're going to keep Rajon. Probably nobody wants him because he's coming off an ACL now. Let me get out of here. Let me go someplace else because I can't coexist with another season with this guy because he's not the type of guy I can deal with. I have to believe that Doc Rivers, being the gentleman and the type of guy he is, it probably said that more than once to Danny Ainge and to the Boston management, his bosses, and said, you know, I got to get me out of here. Please. I can't coach like this. I got to believe that he would say something like that. Right now, though, he's not going to be the head coach of the Clippers, because the Clippers now probably going in a different direction. Who's it going to be? It's going to be Lionel Hollins, Byron Scott, Brian Shaw. Well, I'm reading on ESPN Online, and it says that the sources, whatever in quotation marks the sources are, that the Clippers have intensified the discussions with Byron Scott about the head coaching position. Now, Byron Scott, Cleveland Cavaliers, New Jersey Nets, and both of those teams have not fared well when he was a coach. What makes you think that anything's going to be different coaching the L.A. Clippers? You think Chris Paul is going to come back to Byron Scott? You think Dwight Howard you think Dwight Howard is going to want to join the LA Clippers with Chris Paul, with Byron Scott being the coach? Let me put it this way. You had Vinny Del Negro and you got Byron Scott next to each other. Who are you going to take? Who's got the better record? Not as a player, but as a coach. I take Vinny Del Negro hands down over Byron Scott as a coach. This doesn't make any sense to me. Makes absolutely no sense to me why you would take a losing coach as a Byron Scott. Come on, man. Let's talk. Let's talk coaching career. Let's talk Byron Scott as a coach. He's coached the New Jersey Nets, New Orleans, and Cleveland Cavaliers. And his record, and I'm looking at it right now, his record is 3-1. Byron Scott, let me see. When's it? Oh, no. Byron Scott's coaching career. His coaching career. He coached a total of 937 games. Uh-oh. I got two callers here. Let me grab these guys real quick. Caller from the 240. Welcome to the master plan. What you got to say?
What's up, sir? What you talk about? I just woke up.
Oh, boy. Hold on a minute here. I'm talking about the L.A. You know, you seem to come here every time I'm talking about these guys. I have to be talking about the L.A. Clippers, and now report out that Doc Rivers just talks off again, and also that at one point last season, Doc Rivers, before Rajon Rondo got hurt, that they almost came to fisticuffs in the locker room, and that's one of the reasons why, supposedly, they've been trying to trade Rajon Rondo for the last 2 years, because he's been a disruptive force, disruptive person within the locker room, I guess, especially with Doc Rivers coaching. And Doc Rivers, in my opinion, is a class guy, and Rajon Rondo seems to be like a diva type of point guard and causing problems with Doc Rivers. What do you think about that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, those two don't get along. I don't know. I don't know if I want to call him a diva just yet. He's still a little young. But it's well known that him and Doc don't get along. So that's not going to work. And as of next season starts, that is his team. That is Rondo's team.
Yeah.
As much as I love the truth and KG, but that's Rondo's team.
So what? Before I have another call here, but so what do you think? You think Doc Rivers is going to come back there? He's on a contract. Do you think he's going to come back there or want to come back there, knowing that Rajon Rondo is going to be there, and he doesn't have a buffer like Paul Pierce or KG to be a buffer between him and Rondo?
I don't know if he's going to come back, but $7 million a year is hard to turn down. You know. You know, Doc was a good player, but he ain't get no money like that when he was balling. You know what I'm saying? If I were him, I wouldn't come back. I wouldn't go back. I mean, you know, I'm on record. I don't like Boston. I just like the player.
Right.
You know, it's nothing Boston I like. Nothing.
Right.
Absolutely nothing. Nothing.
Okay, let me bring this caller in from my state and see what we got here. Caller from the 201. Welcome to the master plan. How you doing, my man?
I'm good. I was just calling because I heard you speaking on Byron Scott, and I think you could have been more wrong. Byron Scott's a good coach, man. You seem to forget he took the Nets to the finals 2 times in a row.
Okay, but what has he done since then?
Win season with New Orleans, a 49 win season with New Orleans. You gotta understand something. A coach like Byron Scott, majority of his jobs that he's got to, they were on bad teams. So sometimes when you look at a coach, you can't always look at wins and losses. Like when he went to Cleveland, that was after LeBron. Cleveland had nothing. He started from scratch with that team and tried to have, you know, was responsible for building them up. And a lot of times coaches get stuck in those type of situations. But as far as like him going to the Clippers, Chris Paul had his best seasons in the Byron Scott. They've always had a connection. He's going to get the most production out of Paul. Byron Scott's a pretty good coach, man. You can just look at his resume. I mean, pretty much instead of that job in Cleveland, which nobody was going to win in Cleveland for those years right after LeBron left. I mean, nobody was going to do that. But with the exception of that, he got a pretty good job.
Okay. Well, his record, and I was about to say that before I took these callers, he's coached a little over 900 games, and he's got less than 500 winning record. 416 wins against 521 losses.
You're making a big mistake. When you look at a coach, you can't always look at wins and losses. You have to take into consideration the situations that they've been put in. If a coach takes a job and you know you're taking a rebuilding situation, you're not going to necessarily win. You know that. But you got to look at the progression. Like, if you look at his job in New Orleans, look at the progression. Mm-hmm. He gets there, he rebuilds. He wins nothing. He gets players. He starts doing good. He starts winning. You look at New Jersey, he gets there. He has no players. What happens? It's a progression. They get there the first season, 26 wins. They get a few players. Bang, NBA Finals. That's what when you want to look at how good of a coach is, look at the coaches that have good players, what are they doing with the players? Obviously, you can't win with bad players. Nobody does that. Larry Brown, one of the greatest coaches in NBA history, had a lot of bad teams. Every coach that coached a bad team has seasons where they lost. But what do they do when they have the tools? Every time Byron Scott had the tools, he won.
Okay. I still think it's not a good move for him, the L.A. Clippers. I think they need a coach that's got a better name than Byron Scott.
I think that's the best they're going to get. So we talking about the Clippers.
Wow. Wow. See, you're talking to a guy here that definitely doesn't like the L.A. Clippers. I'm talking about Macau, right?
Right. No, it's not that I don't like them. They're just horrible. They're just horrible, man. I mean, there's only one other team I think is worse than them, and that's my hometown Wizards.
Oh, okay.
Well,
wow.
The Wizards got a little bit of a bright future. They're putting some pieces in place. I mean, they're a couple years from being a 500 team if they keep going the direction
how many
they're going.
Years?
They got a nice little backcourt. They got nice little pieces, little Trevor Ariza, guys like that. They got the third pick, you know. Amnesty,
and how many years?
Put a scoring big man in there. I mean, let John Wall keep moving the way he is. But hopefully, he can stay healthy. The Wizards aren't that far off.
And how many years have we been saying that about the Wizards?
Had the pieces. See, this is what you guys are going to understand.
Hold on. They've had many pieces, many players. What? They've had Gilbert, they've had Mitchell, that's what I'm talking about. This is what they do. They do the same stuff over and
over
again.
But you have to understand, you have a whole new system in place. You have whole new ownership in place.
How many new systems? Nah, man. See, you're not from here. You don't know what I'm talking about. They have constantly been doing this. It's always new coaches, new system, new general manager, and now
let me ask you one question. Now that Ted Leonis is the owner,
I'm seeing the same thing. They keep an Ernie Grunfeld, which is a bad move. They need to get rid of him. You know what I'm saying? This has gone on for years. This is the same thing.
Let me ask you a question. What is the difference between good teams and bad teams?
Players.
Yes. Now, how do we get those players? Now, for a long time, the Wizards, they messed up their draft picks. And as much as we love Jordan, when he went in there, he set them back many, many, many years. Now, you get in there, you get new ownership, you get a new GM. What happens? got a franchise player there for the first time in a long time. You got a really good young player that you can build around. You pair him with a pretty good backcourt running mate. Now you start to get little pieces around them. Hopefully, and I'm not a Wizards fan at all.
Hold on, homeboy. Let me tell you where you're missing in your analysis. You know, and it's pretty good and it's pretty cute. But where you're missing that is once Jordan and them left, you know, and they brought and Ernie Gunfield came in, he did bring in pieces, which was Gilbert Arenas. He brought in Hughes and all of them, and they start making runs. Got that. Now, we starting all over. Same process all over
and
again.
And why are you starting all over? Because the pieces you brought in were pieces that were troubled players.
What do you mean they weren't good?
I mean good as far as their person or who they are.
They went to the playoffs like 3 years in a row.
But you know what? They were a bad fit. You don't get it. There's a reason why you didn't get a job in the NBA.
No, you don't get it. All I'm saying to you is the same cycle of nonsense.
When they get these players, they put them in place, then they find a reason for them to lose, or they have a problem. Hold on.
You guys are talking over each other, and nothing's happening here. I'm gonna give my caller from New Jersey the opportunity first. We got a few minutes left, and I'm gonna give you a few minutes to say what you have to say, and then I'm done. We'll give it to Macau. Go ahead, my man.
All I'm saying is I'm not a Wizards fan by far, but anybody in their right mind know that when you had Gilbert Arenas and that regime there, it was toxic. Yeah, they put production on the court, but those guys are bad dudes. Nobody wanted to touch Gilbert Arenas with a 10-foot pole because everybody knew he was toxic. You have to break that down and build it over. And they're doing a pretty good job. They're not perfect, and it's going to take a little bit of time. You got a nice young nucleus of young players on that team that you keep adding pieces to. Maybe you might amnesty Naismith. Maybe you might make a run at Josh Smith. Maybe you might make a run at one of these local scorers. Maybe you might get a nice little decent play with the third that you have in the draft. All I'm saying is the Wizards are not that far off as much as you're saying. They're about 2 years from really being a decent 500, above 500 team. They did it the right way through the draft.
Mikhail?
Okay. First of all, miss me with the whole, you know, I'm not a Wizards fan because I'm not a Wizards fan either. You know what I'm saying? So you can miss me with that. Number two, this is the same stuff that the Wizards has been going through for the past 30 years. Same thing. They get players, they put them in position, and they have all this potential, and they 2 or 3 years away or 1 year away. It's the same story. Tired of hearing it, tired of seeing it. They suck. Until they demonstrate that they can get the players in play and win on a consistent basis, miss me with all that promise. Because it's the same story. It's the same story when they had Gilbert Arenas in them. It's the same story when they brought Jordan in here. Same story when they had Weber in here. I mean, hell, it's the same story when they brought in Bernard King. Same story when they had, what's that boy's name? Malone. Jeff Malone. Not Moses Malone, Jeff Malone. When he was shooting lights out this joint. So, nah.
How many teams in the NBA have won a championship in the last 20 years?
I'm not buying it. This team will never win a championship, ever.
Brother, how many teams have won a championship in the last 20 years?
How many teams? It hasn't been that many.
Teams, right?
It's about five or six teams.
So with the exception of those 5-6 teams, it's the same story with the rest of the other 25 teams in the league. Every team goes through this. It's not just the Wizards. Every team gets players. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, sometimes they bad fit. Every team spends probably about 10, 15, maybe sometimes 20 years trying to get the right combination together to make that 5-6 year run. Not just the Wizards. Look at the Knicks.
Right.
After Michael Jordan retired, after he left the Bulls, how long were the Bulls bad before they were lucky enough to draft Derrick Rose? This is what I'm telling you.
They drafted more than just Derrick Rose. They constructed an entire team.
Before Derrick Rose came, what was the Chicago Bulls' record?
All right. Well. You guys can agree to disagree. I'm going to have to end this show.
Right.
But I do appreciate you guys calling in and expressing your opinions. A man from New Jersey. What's your name?
My name is Mike.
Mike, feel free to call back again. I enjoyed the conversation, no matter how short it was, along with Macau.
Don't you like it when I come on here and start some stuff?
It's all right. It's quite all right. I enjoy the banter and conversation. It's not a problem. Never is. You know that. Tune in next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know the place. It'd be the Master Plan. I am JT, a.k.a. the Master. I want to thank my two callers for calling in. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. It's going to be a beautiful Sunday. And I'm out of here.